UFO Paranormal and UFO Radio. And tonight we have back with us Sir Clifford, Dr. Sir Clifford Alford out of New Mexico, and he has been doing a weekly show with us on the Cherokee Medicine Way. So we welcome Sir Clifford to our show tonight. And how have you been?
I've been good. How about you?
Oh, not too bad, not too bad.
You're not a crater yet, so
huh?
This is good. You're not a crater yet, so this is good.
Yeah, for the listeners, that's I don't know. I hope it's a little private joke we have going. I emphasize joke on it because we received something in here about a week or so ago saying that there was going to be some sort of meteorite hit on Wisconsin the first week in June. I think it was June 7th, something like that. So anyhow, I called up Clifford and I says, "Clifford, is this true?" So anyhow, that's what we're talking about. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. Is it? It's just a joke, right?
Well,
maybe.
There's always the opportunity, you know, the possibility that meteors are going to make a close pass on the Earth, and there are several that are coming this year that we have about a 50-50 chance either way, but if you consider that it doesn't take a whole lot of debris in space to cause a meteor to go one way or another,
mm-hmm.
and they really can't plot, you know, which way they're going to go, then right now we have, for what they're saying, we have several times this year, six or seven times this year, a 50-50 chance of either getting hit or getting missed. And, you know, 50% chance of getting missed is really pretty great.
Well,
considering all the stuff in space.
Yeah, well, when you consider 50% chance of, it'd be pretty great then, too, also if you consider 50% chance of getting hit. I guess it's
yeah,
what,
but if we
I guess I guess we look at is the bottle or is glass half empty or half full, huh?
Yeah, but either way, if we get hit by something that's the size that it could take out the state of Wisconsin, it's going to destroy the whole Earth anyway, so it's really not going to matter one way or the other.
Yeah, I
guess. If we get hit with something smaller, then, you know, there's some pretty good chances for survival, and that's what we were wanting to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
How you do that.
Okay.
And not just for that, but for any other disaster.
Okay. Well, you're Homeland Security, right?
Well, I'm part of it, yeah.
Yeah, part of it, down in New Mexico. So, but of course, that isn't, we're not talking according to survival through Homeland Security, but of what you know yourself personally as through the Cherokee Medicine Way and common sense and through your survival.
We'll talk about that tactics. And also what we do as far, what we teach to people as far as Homeland Security.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The, you know, probably the best thing for people to do overall is go to a place on the web called U.S. Citizens Corps. Actually, citizenscorps.gov is what the website is.
Speaking about that, everyone, by the way, before, that's U.S. what, citizen?
Just citizenscorps.gov.
Citizenscorps.gov.
.gov.
And by the way, folks, we're talking with Sir Clifford, and you can find him, his website at nasinc.org, NASSINC.org. But, and Clifford's bringing up Citizens Corps, and that's, for those that don't know how to spell it, that'd be Citizens Corps, CORP.gov, GOV.
Yeah. And the thing with Citizens Corps that's so good is, there are several different activities under Citizens Corps, and you can go in and find whoever it is for your state or your county or whatever that is that's affiliated with Citizens Corps in your area, and you can sign up with them. And what I encourage people to do is go through some training with them for what's known as Community Emergency Response Teams, or CERTs. And the thing with a community emergency response team is you get several areas of training, just as far as the basic training goes. It takes a weekend to do it, about 24 hours total. And it covers disaster preparedness in general, disaster psychology, disaster medical services, you know, basic firefighting. It gets into, you know, a little bit on terrorism and hazardous materials type incidents and things, and light search and rescue operations. So it's about 3 to 4 hours of training per segment, and it's very well worth the time it takes to take it, and it's free.
I can tell you, but I'm pulling that up, and it says this page cannot be displayed.
Well, they do take it down from time to time to work on it.
Oh, okay.
And you'll be able to get it up at another time.
Okay.
Now, another thing you can do is you can go to FEMA.gov. Do that one. FEMA.gov.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that one's up.
And on FEMA.gov, which is usually just busy as I get out during the day from around 10 a.m. Eastern Time to around 6 p.m. Pacific Time, any other time is really a good time to get into it, and you can pull up what's called the Emergency Management Institute, and then they have in there an Introduction to CERT course, and it takes about 8 hours to complete it online. You take a test, and they'll send you a nice little certificate that says if you've taken that particular course and stuff. It's great for people who are involved in anything that are that's related to any type of emergency service, or people who just want to know and don't necessarily have a CERT team available in their area that they can go and work with.
But well, I also see that they got that link there for Citizen Corps. I guess what it was I spelt it wrong. It's Citizen Corps. Our course, that's C-O-R-P-S, Citizen, singular, C-I-T-I-Z-E, and then in C-O-R-P-S, one word, .gov, and that pulls it up.
Yeah, and when it comes to just disaster preparedness in general, especially like if you're not in the United States and you're listening to this and you want to know about disaster preparedness in general, then you can go to a website called Ready, R-E-A-D-Y.gov.
Yeah, I see.
And get a whole bunch of information there on just general disaster preparedness. So these are three websites that are real good. If you're in the United States, you go to citizencorps.gov and get signed up. You know, just put your information in there to sign up with U.S. Citizens Corps. And someone from your state or your local area will contact you. And then you can get involved in CERTs really easily that way. And you can also take the course online. And once you're an active part of a CERT team, then you can take lots of the different courses that they have in the Emergency Management Institute. And it's all free.
Uh-huh.
You know, when it comes to preparing for disasters, whether it's a man-made disaster, like, for instance, here in Las Cruces, we have I-10 and I-25. And both these interstates have a major amount of traffic on them, you know, like road traffic. And we have lots of trucks to go through, and then we've got some really major train track systems and stuff running through New Mexico also. And they have lots of tank cars and stuff on them. Now, if you take your average, just to give you an idea, your average tanker that's carrying gasoline or something,
mm-hmm.
is going to be anywhere from around 6,250 to 6,500 gallons of gasoline or whatever fuel they're carrying. Let's say that it's about a third empty because it's been stopping at some gas stations and dropping off stuff, and it's going down the road and something happens and the truck rolls. If it's a hot day like today, it was 108 degrees here.
Mm-hmm.
So a hot day like today, then you're going to have a little bit of water on the bottom of the tank, a whole bunch of gas in the middle, and you're going to have a whole lot of really intense vapor on top. So this thing rolls over, it breaks, it's causing sparks and stuff, and this thing cooks off. It's going to clean up, just totally wipe out everything for about a half a mile in any direction.
Mm.
You know, so that's a major man-made disaster. And then beyond that, for about another half to three quarters of a mile, there's going to be a lot of damage. You know, so that's where, you know, that's the kind of thing that would cause all of the emergency services in this area to be totally overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the search come in. And then they would go and work until such time as people could get things moving. Now, the nice thing with the CERT training is you can go through it, and you don't have to be a part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just happy to have you be trained.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few simple things that anyone can do that they talk about in the training. For example, like if you have a gas line in your house, like my hot water heater is powered by gas. And so is my furnace and stuff. Not that I'm using the furnace right now, mind you. But I have a wrench that's out in the garage that's hanging on the wall right by where the gas comes into the house. So that if I need to, I can just grab that sucker in an emergency and I can turn the valve and close it off so that there's no gas coming into the house. Like, mm-hmm. you know, now we have three volcanoes around here, too. We have lots of people who say, okay, there's not, you know, well, they're dead. Well, no, we have hot springs all over the area, and hot springs come from live volcanoes.
Hmm.
They're not erupting right now, but that's not to say that they can't. And wherever you have volcanoes, you have the propensity for earthquakes. You know, so there are kinds of things that could go wrong just in this area, and as if that isn't bad enough, right on the other side of the mountains from us, we have White Sands Missile Base and Holloman Air Force Base.
Yeah.
We're talking atomic warheads. You know, and something cooks off over there, it'll turn White Sands into glass, and a bunch of, you know, the blast will go up the side of the mountains and over and rain down on Mexico, and a lot of the radiation will go there, but some of it will come to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are things that we all need to be prepared for. Now, when it comes to any kind of disaster, the standard doctrine, basically, as far as Homeland Security is concerned, is for people to have a three-day supply of both food and water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you limit yourself to a three-day supply of food and water on hand for everyone in your household or who could possibly be there, including your pets and all that sort of stuff, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do have a major disaster, if you consider that most of our supplies have been depleted by the war in Iraq and Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the stuff that we had before was either destroyed or given away during the Clinton administration, and so when it comes to something happening, it's likely to be a whole lot longer than 3 days. It could be 2 weeks
mm-hmm.
before you have the opportunity for someone to you know, really kind of bail you out. Now, here in the desert, that means you need to have a lot of water on hand.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have water to cook with. You might want to wash a little yourself and your clothes every once in a while, and you're certainly going to want it to drink.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that people need to consider. And when you get things that you're going to store for your food and stuff, then it needs to be things that are fairly light and that you can carry and that you can get something out of. You know, good nutrition and stuff out of without it being just a bunch of junk. You know, don't buy 2 weeks worth of candy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, candy will keep half it forever because both sugar and salt, which is in just about every piece of candy in the country, are great preservatives, but they won't provide you what you need nutrition-wise. You know, likewise, if you have people who are on some kind of a medication, be it herbal or pharmaceutical, they need to have plenty on hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because if something happens that shuts down transportation in an area, it's not coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, have some on hand, kind of rotate your stock through. If you need to work it out with your doctor that you need to be able to have an extra supply available or something and get another prescription for it, then do it. You know, whatever it takes. From an herbal standpoint, I encourage people to have several different herbs available to them. First and foremost, always, is lobelia. Because lobelia is a thinking herb. It's the only thinking herb that we have that literally does whatever is best for you, both emotionally and physically. So, you know, have lobelia on hand. Have it in a cut and sifted form that you can have people smoke if they need to, or make a tea with, and also have it in a tincture or a vinegar so that, someone needs something they can get into them fast, they can take some drops of it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say a tincture or a vinegar because they're, a tincture is an alcohol. There are a lot of people who are alcoholics. They don't want to touch something like that. So have it in a vinegar, which is just fine. Secondly on the herbalist is yellow dock. Yellow dock has more vitamins and minerals in it than just anything else.
How do you spell dock? D-O-C-K?
D-O-C-K, yeah.
Okay.
And, there are all sorts of different kinds of dock, and they're all good, but yellow dock just has the most in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow dock is also good for just about any kind of cancer and avoiding cancer and stuff. And so it's a good thing to have, especially if there's any type of nuclear event. There's a real nifty little video out called Dirty War.
Mm-hmm.
There were some claims made in Great Britain about how prepared they were. And so some of the movie makers in England ran around and talked with all the folks in London, the firefighters and the public health officials and stuff, and came up with, based on what they had and their level of preparation, what would be a reasonable event to expect to have happen. And one of the things they talked about was a big chunk of London being closed down for 30 years. And basically everything inside that area is dead, but then there are a lot of people with injuries and stuff outside of that area. So, it's a thing to look at and say, okay, yeah, this could actually happen here. Now, in the event of a nuclear incident, then there's an outfit online called KI03.com. And KI3 is either potassium iodate or potassium iodide. And it doesn't matter which one you get, if as long as it's either potassium iodate or potassium iodide, it's going to work. And the longest that anyone should ever expect to have to take it would be to take one a day for 200 days. One tablet. And when you can break it down for small children and you can break them down for your pets and stuff, and it's a good thing to have on hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in a very unstable world right now. Now let's say that we do have a meteor strike one of these days. We don't know when it's going to hit. I mean, it could be a tiny pea-sized meteorite that maybe it was the size of, size around as a football field when it came into the atmosphere, but it's about pea-sized when it gets to the ground. And let's say it's over in Houston where there are 13 nuclear reactors, and it goes zipping through one of those reactors and breaks up a bunch of water lines and stuff like that, and this thing cooks off, and we have, like, another Chernobyl on it. We have it here instead of in the Ukraine. And we have it in a city that has almost 10 million people in it. There are a lot of people in trouble. That is going to overwhelm all of the supplies that are on hand in a hurry. And if you don't have your own, you're not going to get taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is to have a good medical kit available, bandages and painkillers and anti-inflammatories and stuff. And from a herbal standpoint, the best anti-inflammatories that you're going to get, and basically painkillers and stuff, are going to be willow bark, and willow bark and leaves work, and there are lots of places where it grows all over the country, basically, whether it's weeping willow or black willow or white willow or red willow, it'll all work. What doesn't work is out here in the desert we have some stuff called desert willow, and it's a great astringent. But it doesn't have salicylic acid in it. It doesn't dilate veins and arteries and stuff in the area where you're having your pain and cool it off and relieve it. But that's one that you need to have. Have some willow on hand. And then another is wild lettuce. Wonderful, wonderful anti-inflammatory. And bilberry. Now, bilberry is good as an anti-inflammatory, but it's also real good for improving your night vision. people who run around in cities where there's light all of the time. Their night vision gets kind of burnt out and they don't use it very much, and then when it really is dark, they can't see.
And how do you spell Bilberry?
B-I-L-B-E-R-R-Y.
Okay.
In fact, there are a lot of health food stores that sell bilberry nectar, and you can go and get it to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great for you. You know, if you have any inflammation anywhere in your body, it's going to relieve it. But also, it's going to work wonders for your eyes. Because, you know, it helps you to be able to have a normal adjustment of time to darkness. Like if you wind up in darkness real fast, on the average, it takes around 45 minutes for you to gain your full night vision. And then, if something happens to expose you to some light or something, then it takes another 35 minutes to regain it back again. So, it's not a, you know, it's not a real good thing to have problems with. Well, there are so many people in this country who have been exposed to light for so much that really do have problems developing it. And when they wind up in an emergency situation, and so they wind up being basically night blind because they just can't see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, bilberry is the way out of that. And it's good anti-inflammatory if you have pain and stuff. So, those are a few good herbs to have as well. If you have your herbal stuff on hand, you have some pharmaceutical stuff on hand, and you kind of keep it up to date and stuff, then you're basically going to be a whole lot better off.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is clothing that is good and durable for every season. And, you know, something like maybe, you know, a tent, a pack for each member of your family, you know, a sleeping bag, things of this nature. Because even if you have everything that you need to be able to stay in your home, then you might not be able to get out, you might not be able to stay there, you might wind up having to get out of your home and go somewhere else, and you need to be able to carry your stuff with you.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to consider in this day and time, too, is that, well, let's back up a little bit. In 1979, 1980, somewhere there was a trucker strike
mm-hmm.
in this country. Independent truckers went on strike. And it took about 10 days to totally empty every grocery store and just about any other kind of store that you could buy something in because people were in such a panic to get stuff. And at that time, I was stationed with an A-team in Lubbock, Texas, and right across the street from our building was Texas Tech University. And so I was going over there and taking a few classes from time to time. And one of the classes that I took just about every semester I could was a class called Social Problems. It was a real fun class because if you didn't have a social problem going on, you could invent one and then study the reaction. And I really had fun with that. You know, it's kind of like doing psychological warfare on the public.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was for the university, and so, you know, we had a lot of fun with it. Well, at this time, we decided that since this was going on, by golly, this was just made to order, and we were going to do a study on it. And so we sent out a survey. It was real fun. We sent out 12,000 surveys, and we got 10,000 responses back. I mean, that's just almost unheard of in doing
surveys.
Yeah,
got that right.
You know, but people were so scared what was going on. It was just great. So what we found out from the survey was that 3 out of every 10 people were willing to steal someone else's food.
Mm-hmm.
Another 3 out of 10 were willing to kill someone to get their food.
Mm-hmm.
And another, and beyond that, you know, another 1% for, you know, very definitely, and up to 3% possibly were willing to hunt other people actively as a source of food.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. Things are a whole lot different in this country than it was in 1979 and 80.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking for the better either.
No, I know.
So, you got to be able to defend yourself. You know, if you need to be able to hunt, you need to be able to hunt quietly. if you can't, then you're going to shoot something, and everyone's going to hear the shot, and they're going to come to help you take care of what it is that you shot, including taking care of you.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to do it quietly. And there's some real simple ways to do it. There's an outfit that you can find online called Compassico, and that's CompassEco.com. And Compassico.com sells CO2 and, well, just, you know, basically pellet guns and stuff in general. I have two favorites that, you know, they have others that they carry that are more powerful, that get up around 900 feet per second or 1,000 feet per second or so. But, and some even that, well, basically you can take out a car with, that fire around, you know, 1,300 feet per second. But, just to give you an idea as to how it breaks down, if something fires 500 feet per second, then its maximum effective range is 342 yards. You know, we're talking about almost 3.5 football fields.
Yeah.
And that's more than enough distance to be able to hunt in a public place. You know, like a city or something like that, where maybe what you're hunting is the dog or the cat walking across the street or something.
Uh-huh.
And dog tastes good, it's okay. They were actually a main food source for Native Americans in this country before white people came and brought their beef cows and stuff.
Yeah. Chinese and the Laotians, that they eat dog uh-huh. and cat.
Well, in fact, that's where the dog, the chow, came from, was the Chinese developed it as fur and food.
Oh, okay.
If I were developed to be fur and food, I'd be kind of cranky, too, like most chow dogs are. So. But, you know, when it comes to hunting these things, you need something fairly quiet, and you need something fairly reliable. Here's one to consider that two things that Compassico carries, two weapons. One is made by the Communist Chinese. It's called the Tech Force 66. It breaks down into two parts so that it's easily packaged. It's basically the size of a British bullpup rifle, which is what their infantry uses and stuff. Really nice, compact design with a long barrel that has good range and stuff. It has a 16-round clip, and it fires 720 feet per second, which means that around 500 yards away you can kill something. And it comes with a scope on it. And all you have to do is to run your scope. Well, the thing with it is it's what's known as a spring gun. It does not use CO2. It has a little cocking lever on the side that if you've got the butt up against your shoulder, it's real easy to crank that sucker back. It takes around 25 pounds of pressure to do it. And then you just slide it forward, and it's ready to fire the next round. And the thing is that you have to fire it about 1,000 times when you first get it to get the spring up to its full full function, so that you have the full force and stuff. Because when you first get it, if you could do something like, say, shoot a rabbit with it, and you might bruise the rabbit, but that's about it. But by the time you get through firing that 1,000 rounds, then it's going to be up to where it's doing about 720 feet per second. Now, they have another little thing that's just wonderful, and that is, it's called a Skiff 3000. It's a little pistol made by Enix, which is a Russian company. And this one actually uses a CO2 cartridge. It's a pistol. And it has a magazine that has, it's basically a rotary magazine, and it holds 28 rounds. It fires 500 feet per second. Now, the longest distance you're ever likely to get into a shooting match with a pistol is about 35 yards at the most, usually less. Usually actually 35 to 40 feet is the distance that you wind up in a firefight with a pistol. The nice thing with this is, number one, it fires 28 rounds. Number two, your average pistol that's out there in society today, as far as carrying, you know, a firearm type of pistol instead of an air arm, is going to carry around 16 rounds or less on the average. So you're going to be still shooting when they ran out. They're having to change magazines. So that's a plus. Number three, if you're carrying a regular firearm, then, like you said, M16, 45, something like that, or a 9mm, then your average amount of ammunition that you're going to be able to carry, like a basic combat load for the United States military, is 450 rounds. Well, if you're carrying the same amount of weight in stuff that, you know, where you're just carrying these extra clips and magazines and pellets, then you can carry about 5,000 rounds. So you have a significant advantage there.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's a major advantage with it is that it's also quiet. A CO2 pistol that's made by Crossman or Daisy, American companies, will hold its charge for a week if you're lucky, and it'll sound like a .22 going off when you shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
If you fire this little NH pistol, the SCIF 3000, then it's going to sound maybe, you might be able to hear it 20 yards away.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Anything beyond that, they're not going to hear anything.
So you're better off actually with that one?
You're better off with that one for two reasons, three reasons. Yeah, it's quieter, it's got more, you can carry more ammunition than a firearm, and it has a bigger magazine capacity. And you can fire about 75 rounds, actually about three magazines really, when you get right down to it, with a CO2 cartridge at full strength. With the Tech Force 66, then you can fire it at about, you can just fire it all day long, because it doesn't take CO2, all you have to do is cock the thing. And it's real easy to do, and it's real quick. Now, when you fire it, though, anybody over 10 yards away from you isn't going to hear you. 10 yards is not much.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you can reach out and touch someone 500 yards away.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
The reason that these folks came up with this stuff, it started with Norinco in North Korea. And it was real funny. Norinco started selling stuff over here in this country about, 15 years ago. They were selling SKS rifles, and they were selling a single-shot pellet rifle that fires 900 feet per second. And the purpose of the pellet rifle was to take out sentries. And that's what the Russians, the Chinese made the Tech Force 66 for, and what the Russians had made the NX pistol for, is to take out sentries. Now, why would they do that? Okay, let's meddle in politics a little bit. There have been, if I've got my count right, 4 Glasnost and 7 Perestroikas. And they all ended. And guess what? This one's going to end too. There was a reason for it. You drop the Berlin Wall, you say anybody can go anywhere they want to, you get rid of a whole bunch of dissidents, you get a whole bunch of Western technology and money into your country, and you spread your special forces and intelligence people all over the world and have them in place to do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even though they were doing it more openly, the North Koreans and the Chinese have been doing it too. And the real funny thing that some of us who do intelligence work saw when Norinco started selling this stuff, it's like, wait a minute, we know who that is. You see, Norinco is the North Korean Secret Service. It's their intelligence apparatus, their spies.
Mm-hmm.
So the stuff that they were selling over here, they were making it available over here for their people to be able to have it. Now, it didn't take too long, and Honda and Yamaha and all these folks were selling 3-wheelers and 4-wheelers over here. Well, they were asked to do that because that's what the 3-wheelers is what the North Korean intelligence services use, and 4-wheelers are what the Soviet Spetsnaz have used for years and years before they were ever available here. But they had people here, and they needed to be available for them to use. See what's going on here?
Yeah.
So, we're going to have, you know, no matter what happens in this country, whether we have an invasion, whether we have a natural disaster that's major, like, you know, we've got most of the volcanoes on the West Coast are full of lava right now. They're ready to cook off and stuff. There are some major faults out there. The San Andreas fault has gotten the most attention, but there's some that are really worse. You know, there are other faults and stuff that run all over the country. We could have earthquakes in other places and stuff. We could have volcanoes in other places in the country. We can have, you know, we've had bigger and bigger hurricanes every year because of the garbage we put into the atmosphere. And we're likely to have some super hurricane one of these days that's just going to just blow away our East Coast.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we've got all kinds of things that can possibly happen, and then we have invasion or insurrection in the country.
Yeah.
So, being prepared is a good thing. But being prepared in an intelligent way and think about things in a different way than you normally do. You cannot depend on the government to take care of you all the time.
Yeah.
Questions come to mind at this point?
Yeah, I do. I've got something I want to add, because I know people are going to listen to the show, and they're going to say, oh, gross. But in matter of survival, we have to bring up the urine.
Yep. Yep.
Because
it's
not only...
the best medicine you'll ever have for yourself is your own urine.
Because
if you have any injury that's, you know, that's bled, that gets infected and stuff, your own urine is going to be the best thing to heal it and get rid of the infection. And if you get right down to it, a lot of those Norse folks, the Vikings that used to come up to Newfoundland and Nova Scotia and stuff, and actually got down to where they covered a good chunk of the eastern seaboard eventually and journeyed way inland. Well, they would come over here to this country and then go home. They'd be so healthy they hardly knew what to do with themselves. And everyone thought, oh, it was the sea voyage that did it. And so they kind of had this deal where, as I understand it, if they managed to kill someone who was on a ship that was about to go somewhere, then they were able to they would be able to be on that crew and go over with that ship. Now, the thing that was real interesting is whenever these little ships went out, they would have about 10 gallons of water per man, and they would drink their water, and then after that, they drank their urine all the way over. And then they'd have, of course, fresh water when they were running around the Americas and stuff. And on the way home, would have about 10 gallons, since that was about all they could carry. And then they would drink their urine, all the urine that came out of their body. And when they got home, they'd be so healthy that it was just unbelievable. And it was the urine that did it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mentioning urine is a good thing. If you drink seawater, you die.
Yeah.
You drink urine, you live.
Yeah. Okay.
If you don't know about the water and stuff that's available, then that's one thing.
That's another thing too. Running water is safe. Water that is still, don't drink.
Well, running water is generally, you know, is the only hope you have for clean water, because especially if it's a shallow stream and it's going through lots of stuff like sand and gravel and stuff, because that'll purify a lot of it. But there are so many pollutants and stuff in the water today, and even in the rain and stuff, that it's not a good idea. If it's raining and you want to collect water to drink, you need to let it rain, you know, steady for a good 5 minutes first to clean the pollutants out of the air before you put it out there, but you're still going to get some in the rainwater.
Yeah.
Now, there's an outfit called the Herbal Healer Academy. I don't remember their website offhand, but there's a lady named Marija McCann runs the thing, and they're over in Arkansas, I believe. And they have a little kit that you can test water to see if it's safe to drink and stuff, and it runs about $14 for the kit. So something like that's a good thing to have on there.
Well, okay, what about in your kit having some bricks of coal? Because, like, if you run water through the coal, right? Or to put like coal in, charcoal. Now, would it be charcoal or coal?
It's actually charcoal.
Charcoal, okay.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But you can also buy some really nice little kits at just about any sporting goods store. You know, especially if they're doing the camping equipment and stuff. So there's a thing called a survival straw that you can just stick in some water and drink through it, and it'll purify about 100 gallons of water. There are other things, like I've got one that I can pump through that's got a really good-sized filter on it, and it'll get out virtually everything that's in the water for about 1,000 gallons, and you can do about a gallon an hour with it.
Well, so, now let's say you're out in the woods, okay, away from all stores, you ran out of the charcoal. How do you make charcoal? Just by burning wood?
Yeah, you burn wood.
And then when it charcoals up, then you've got what you need in order to cleanse your water.
Well, actually, that's only one thing that you need. A real good way to make something that will clean water and stuff is to find something, whether it's something like a 5-gallon bucket or a piece of plastic, or maybe you have a pack that's waterproof and you don't mind poking a hole in the bottom of it. And, you know, if you need to get the water and stuff, you're not going to mind doing that at all. You can put you some basically dry matter, like, you know, dry grass or stuff at the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're doing it with a 5-gallon bucket, for an example. You poke a few small holes in the bottom, put you some dry grass and stuff in that'll cover, take up about 2 inches just when it's packed down,
mm-hmm.
and then put you some small stones like pebbles and stuff in there, and then to cover up, take up about another 6 to 8 inches. And then you're going to put sand in there, and you have that sand to where it comes up to about anywhere from 12 to 8 inches from the top,
mm-hmm.
and then you're going to have your charcoal on top of that, and you pour your water into it and allow it to seep down through it, and it'll, you know, the charcoal and then the sand and then the pebbles and then the vegetative matter and stuff will actually clean out a lot of the garbage and stuff that's in there. And when it comes out, a few little holes you made in the bottom at the point where you're going to collect your water and stuff from, it's going to be relatively pure. Now, it's still a good thing at that point because of things that, with different types of virus and bacteria and stuff that are running around in the world, that after you have gone through that process, if you have the capability, then boil the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask.
Yeah. Another thing, too, is if you have some bleach on hand, like Clorox, that's just pure bleach, you can put about 4 drops per quart and let it sit for a couple of hours, and that'll work wonders. You can also get iodine tablets that help a lot. When it comes to bleach and stuff, you want to avoid stuff like Purex that are not pure bleach, that have additives and stuff in them, because they will thoroughly mess you up. You know, we had some folks in the service at Fort Hood. It was around 1980, I think spring of 84. They knew that they were supposed to get some bleach, but someone didn't tell them about getting things that are fairly pure. They put a bunch of Purex in the water, and people were running around acting like they were kind of stoned and stuff. And this was a medical unit, and people who were coming in who were basically okay except for being hurt in the field and stuff, when they got into this medical unit and started drinking this water out there, then they started acting just as stoned and disoriented as the other people, and we finally traced it back to one blister bag they were getting the water out of and found out the people who set it up put Purex in it.
Hmm. So you go you use the chlorine bleach.
Yeah, it has to be the pure chlorine bleach. It cannot have any additives at all in any way. Mm-hmm. Now, see, Purex is great to wash your clothes with.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real good to drink. You know, you certainly don't want to drink chlorine straight either, but you know, Clorox, you know, at about, you know, 4 drops per quart will work wonders as far as cleaning up the water and stuff. It'll taste bad,
mm-hmm.
but it'll still kill a lot of the stuff that's in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so another thing too, if you have an emergency situation that shuts down public services,
mm-hmm.
is you better have your own portable toilet,
mm-hmm.
And you need to have something that you can cook with. You know, whether it's a fireplace or a wood burning stove, or you can set up a campfire in your backyard or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or let's say you live in an apartment complex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some light string or some type of other fire tab or something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do something like that, though, then you also need to be doing your cooking in a reasonably ventilated area, like with an open window or something, even if it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you wind up gassing yourself otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Well, let's just, you know, If well, we've been missed so many times, I mean, you know, we can't look at it like it'll never happen, because I mean,
no,
it's bound to happen sooner or later. So, and I mean, I always look at it the best. An ounce of prevention. Yeah, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, the best thing to do is take your advice on that. Now, what does Homeland Security have to, what are they planning on doing about?
Well, there are caches of food all over the country. And there are, you know, organizations that provide water for anybody who needs it wherever there's a disaster, like the Anheuser-Busch Company. If you have a major problem somewhere, if you will request, you'll give them at least a few days, you know, like 5 days to a week, and you need a bunch, they'll send out a fleet of 5 trucks minimum with 53-foot trailers full of what would be, you know, like your average 12-ounce Coke can, only it's water.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's from Anheuser-Busch. You won't get drunk on drinking this water. But, you know,
I can hear a couple of guys out there listening to this now saying, well, damn.
Yeah, but, you know, that's being provided, you know, to disaster victims all over the country by Anheuser-Busch, and it's a wonderful service.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering that, you know, they don't make anything for it.
Well, you know what I have on hand here is face masks. You know,
yeah.
Just those cheap little white ones. Yeah, just
uh-huh.
those cheap little ones, you know, because, well, of course, you know, some of the investigations I do, you know, we never know if there's mold in the air or not. So
yeah.
A lot of times what we just do, you know, is just wear the mask, you know, just as a protection. But, I mean, like, if there was, one of those super volcanoes that went off and left a lot of ash in the air,
uh-huh.
you know, it would be advisable, because they're so cheap to buy, you know,
yeah,
just to have them on hand, and like you said, some goggles too, because
some goggles, a hard hat is good, some gloves, you know, your basic protective stuff.
Yeah.
And if you have it on hand in an emergency kit, and you only use it for the emergencies and stuff, then it's available when you need it.
Yeah.
You know, another thing good, people need to have fire extinguishers in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
I've got fire extinguishers, but I've also got hoses on three sides of the house, and I've got about 100 feet of hose coiled in each one, and I've got nozzles where, if I need to, I can fight a fire in my own home with it, or I can fight a fire on any home around me.
Oh, that's good. Neighbors probably appreciate that. Now we just
got. Hopefully, they never have to find out.
Yeah. Now let's just hope that they got that for you too, huh? But I was going to say something else. Oh, what the heck was that? Hmm. Oh, darn. Ah.
Yeah. There are some fuels that you can, you know, for your cars and stuff.
Uh huh.
That are available that they, you know. You try and put a match to it, it will not burn.
Uh-huh.
But it's a long-term storage fuel source that will burn just fine in your car. And you can get, you know, a few gallons of something like that to have on hand, maybe have one in your car. The nice thing about having something like that in your car is if you have a wreck or something like that, then you don't have the chance of maybe someone tailgates you or something, and you don't have to worry about gasoline sloshing around from a broken plastic container. But it'll still provide fuel for you to get around and move. Another thing, when it comes to gas and stuff, right now the world oil supply will be depleted in another 19 years.
Yeah.
So, good time now to invest in a good bicycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you have something like that around, it's a good source of transportation. Even if it's not transportation for you, you can hang a ton of stuff off of a bicycle and just push it.
Yeah. Or a horse.
You know, a horse.
I like horses.
Except with a bicycle, you don't have to feed it.
Yeah, true. Oh, I know what it was, those underground caves. They maintain a steady 55 degree temperature, so like if there was, you know, like a freeze that went through, you know, or extreme heat, to find one of these caves, you know, to just kind of wear it out until, you know, help arrives.
Yeah.
You know, you would probably be a whole lot better off if you're in some area to know where there's caves, underground tunnels, whatever the case may be, you would stand a much better chance of surviving, you know, until, you know, in there until the extremities were over with. I would think.
In fact, any place I go around this state and over into West Texas and Arizona, anytime I see a cave that's big enough for someone to get into, I have a little code that I use in a little log that I carry with me in the car, so that I know where those caves are, you know, what mile markers are around and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. Well, like for the last 3 years, I've been trying to mark out, you know, map out all these underground tunnels and cave systems in this area for in case there is a natural or some sort of a disaster, you know. But people think I'm a little crazy over it, but that's fine, you know. If the time ever came, boy, I'll tell you, they'd be right here to find out where they were, too.
Yeah.
So, such is life, huh?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Like, to watch for coming natural disasters, too, I think I suppose I should finish my sentence first. Watch the animals. Because the animals will always give you a sign of you know, like, natural disasters coming in, like earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, things like that, you know. So
they will either act erratic, or if they know something's coming ahead of time, like a volcano or something, they will leave the area.
Yeah. And
you'll see the domestic animals trying to, but the wild animals will be doing it.
Yeah. So if you see those guys heading south, best thing for you guys to do is head south right along with them. Or find out, you know, check it out. Because what happens is the government, you know, to avoid a panic, they're not going to say anything until the very last minute in hopes that, you know, like, it's not going to happen. and by the time, you know, if you know, they finally give the alert, it's, chances are it's going to be too late.
Yeah, there's another thing, too, to consider that our government has been real lax on. If you go over in anywhere in Eastern Europe, like, you know, the Soviet bloc countries and stuff, they still have a very active civil defense program.
Yeah.
We don't here.
Yeah.
In fact, the Department of Homeland Security actually was formed out of the dregs of what was left of civil defense. There are a lot of people who think that the Department of Homeland Security was actually formed by George Bush following 9/11. In actuality, you can go back to, for instance, the counterintelligence manual for the United States Army that was put out in, you know, the edition in 1994. And it talks about the Department of Homeland Security in it. And basically, that was simply civil defense had kind of been sort of phased out as a term that was politically correct, and it became Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
And so, since the general public didn't know about this and stuff, then Mr. Bush simply took the liberty of making it look like he created some great new thing, and all he did was allow them to increase their manpower from around 20,000 to 300,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have no problem with Homeland Security as long as it's not misused.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, Bush and his people had, you know, they were misusing it, you know.
Well, they have, as far as, you know, the 16 points in the Patriot Act, which are up for review in December, and that violate the Constitution. And actually, if you're listening to this show and you're an American citizen, you need to be talking to your congressman and senator and getting them to vote against those being continued. Because all of the rest of the Patriot Act that made it possible for the police to do investigations and stuff were already existent in other laws that have been passed since 1974.
Well, Wisconsin's doing pretty good. We had Sensenbrenner, and Sensenbrenner is pretty, he's pretty anti, you know, Patriot Act. You know, so
yeah.
I think that as far as our state goes, that we'll be voting against it with no,
yeah,
with no pressure put on. But
yeah,
there's a, yeah, but it gets, well, you know how it is out there. You've talked to various people. Nobody's happy about the Patriot Act. You know, because, but like I said, as far as Homeland, as long as they're not misusing it, you know, I have no problem with it. But when they're using it to eavesdrop in on, you know, just regular telephone conversations, or they feel that they've got the right to just go in and do search and seizure without, you know, proper, you know,
not ever even telling you about it if they don't want to.
Yeah, yeah, that. That to me is abuse of power.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyhow, and so people find it's really important to know. Now, as far as those caves are concerned, though, because it's important to know about these caves, but would the people be able to even use them?
Well, if they know where the caves are, then and can get to them, then yeah, they can, if they can defend them.
Because I know that most of these cave systems that are deep enough, you know, to maintain that 55 degrees, most of them have got some sort of government facilities sitting on them, or, you know, or they're in these certain parks, you know. And, you know, like right now, you know, I know that none of us would be able to go down in them, you know.
Well, you couldn't necessarily in the ones that maybe where you're at that you're talking about that have the government facilities and stuff, but there are other caves in other areas. And a good thing for people to know is if you know where a cave is and it's possible for you and your family to get to it, it's a good thing to stock some supplies in the area, you know, nice and well hidden and well sealed up and stuff so that no water gets into it and mold or mildew or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, a really good way to do that is in with PVC. You take some PVC, you put a big, what's called a bullwhip on it, on one end, and you put your stuff in it, bullwhip on the other end, and you glue it shut, and you bury it wherever you need to as a cache. And it can have a little bit of everything in it. It can have, you know, a weapon and some ammunition. It can have some medical supplies, some food, some clothing, and stuff like that. A real good thing to have when you're in a survival situation, too, is something like books that make you think.
Mm-hmm.
And playing cards and things of that nature, so that you just don't go stir crazy.
Yeah.
But you can, and, you know, fishing supplies or whatever. You can put anything you want to in something like this, and you put it someplace near where it is you expect to go. And if you have several of those around, then it increases your options. But you wouldn't want to actually put it in the cave because somebody else might go there and get there first.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, so, but if you know where a cave or something is, too, then a real good thing to do is you don't tell people about it. Oh, I found this cave out at so-and-so place.
Yeah.
Because if you wind up having competition in an emergency situation, friendship can go right out the window when it comes to the survival of you and your family.
Well, and that would be a good place to store all your, like, your how-to books, you know, like how to prepare water, how to, what type of herbs to be looking for out there, for whatever the case may be.
Now, I'm going to mention someone who's not exactly your favorite person, but I'm going to mention
I know who you're talking about.
Yes, you are.
That's okay. He's got he's got a great he's got something great out there.
He's got a couple of CDs that has just about everything that you could ever possibly want to know about terrorism. It has the Community Emergency Response Team manual on it. It has all kinds of survival manuals, how to make all sorts of primitive weapons and use them, how to throw a knife, how to throw a tomahawk. I mean, everything under the sun is in his family emergency preparedness CDs. And you send Blue Otter $20, and he sends you this and a bunch of stuff on Native American prophecy back too.
Mm-hmm. And people can find that at prophecykeepers.com.
Prophecykeepers.com.
Yeah. See how nice I am? I even give his website. But, I believe that, you give credit where credit's due, so.
Yeah. And he's put together a great resource there.
Yeah, I see he's still up, so, you should have no problem finding him. So. But anyhow, you just, so that would be, and keep, something right there. If you find a place, a cave or something like that, keep all that stuff right there so, you've got it. Don't... And make sure that, and make sure you always have a lot of batteries, too, because I prefer, something that's more, physical, like paper or something like that, because of the fact that if you, if you're too dependent on a CD player,
right.
For all this information, and all of a sudden, you run out of batteries, well, there goes all your information. So if you, get it, get this information, get it in, a booklet form,
Print it off.
Yeah.
Now, there's two good reasons to do something like doing Blue Otter's CD.
Yeah.
Number one, you've got such a massive information available that you can print it off. And when you print it off, you need to read it. You need to be familiar with it before you wind up in a survival situation. Mm-hmm. And if possible, try some of these things before the time comes. Secondly, is Blue Otter isn't going to tell the federal government that you ordered the stuff from it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you order something, from a lot of companies online, like Paladin Press or something like that, then the government's going to be wanting to know what it is that you ordered and stuff. And if you go to the library and you check something out, they actually have had libraries get in trouble saying, because they said, we will not report to the federal government what our members check out.
Yeah.
But that's a part of the Patriot Act.
And you know, the thing,
guarantee that Blue Water ain't going to report you for that.
Well, see, the thing is, I mean, they should be happy that we are trying to be self-sufficient when it comes to an emergency disaster, because the more adept people are in taking care of themselves and their family, the less stress it is on the government having to do it for us.
Yes, there are things that are on Blue Otter CDs, though, that if you ordered it from somewhere else or you got it from the library, that they would consider you to be a threat. For instance, there's some stuff on security culture, like security culture for activists. And, you know, how to tell if someone has run a ringer into your organization, a spy, you know, and uncover them, and stuff of that nature, which is really good information to have in a survival situation, so that you can learn who you can trust and who you can't. And the thing is that most people have a problem with in a survival situation is they're not used to thinking the way that they need to think. Like, if I'm teaching someone about counter-surveillance, which I do, and, you know, with one of my companies and stuff, is that you can't just blithely take it for granted that you have the right to drive anywhere and do anything or go anywhere, and people aren't going to bother you. If you're, you know, like if you're driving somewhere, then you look for certain indicators that make you more aware of everything that's around you, so that you can tell if someone's following you or not. You know, and it's a learning to think in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to be paranoid about it. You don't have to be filled with fear about it and stuff. But you simply learn to watch for things, so that if something does come up, that you're aware of it and you can take whatever steps you need to avoid it in the future. If you see somebody walking down the street, if you're somebody like me, who's been in situations where, as an intelligence operative, someone's coming along and they might just suddenly attack me. So, even today, even though I really don't feel any great danger and stuff from it, anytime I'm walking downtown or something like that, or in a mall and stuff, and people are coming along, I look at that person, I look at the things that they're wearing, the things that they're carrying and stuff, see, automatically catalog what the potential weapons are and how I would take that person down if I needed to. And it got to be so automatic when I was doing intelligence work all the time that I don't even have to think about it. I just automatically do it. And that's the thing. People need to change the way they think. And that's where the community emergency response team training is so good, because they have this one segment on for about 3 hours on disaster psychology, learning to think in a different way.
I was talking to the Manitoka American Indian Council, and they said, you know, that what they've done is that they've got like actual semi loads, you know, like, you know, the tankers, you know, the tanks, and they've got like semi loads all over buried, you know, in case of a natural disaster. Of course, it's for the American Indians, but I mean, you know, they're prepared. You talk to the and of course the Manitoka, they are not just, you know, for Cherokee. I mean, you know, they're pretty much if I'm right about them, they're pretty much representative of various Indian cultures. But you talk to the Mormons. The Mormons have caches all over the world.
Caches all over the world, but their individual families required to have stuff on the intake.
And
they're supposed to have a year's supply of food on hand.
And you know, the only ones that really aren't, you know, consciously taking care of their own are the white people, you know. I think that they're just so, I don't know what the problem is, you know, why they're not, but you know, they need to wake up and realize, you know, that, you know, something, you know, can happen. And you can't wait till the last minute when it happens and then look around and think, oh, my God, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, if you were like what the Manitoka are doing as far as the Mormons and all those guys, you know, you wouldn't have to worry. You know, it'd be there for you.
Yeah. Now, if you aren't prepared and there's a major disaster, then you're going to be either of two things. Either you're going to be dead or you're going to be a slave.
Yeah.
Those are the only choices you can have.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if people are listening to, you know, paying attention to this or not, but I know you should be. And, you know, I'm probably just as guilty as the next person. I mean, we have our food on hand, and of course, you know, I'm trying to get these messages out, and that's one of the reasons Clifford is doing these shows on the Cherokee Medicine Way, is so that you guys understand, you know, all alternative lifestyles, you know, of how you can, prepare foods, what to do in case of disasters, all these little things like this, you know, even with you just listening, you know, it goes into your subconscious, you know. You'd be surprised all the things that you're going to remember of these shows when the time comes.
Yeah.
You know, it'll just kind of like pop up and say, oh my God, I remember that. Going through, you know, and you see a grove of willow trees. Oh yeah, I remember, you know, what Clifford said about the willow bark, you know, being used, you know, for a painkiller, you know. So all these shows, you know, that Clifford is doing is very, very important for you guys. And I hope that all of you appreciate, you know, what he's doing for you. You know, I know I do. And NASInc.org is where you can contact Clifford if you've got questions on this, or you can turn around, contact us, and then we just send the email to you. By the way, I haven't had a chance to send it. We've been getting quite a lot of IMs. A lot of people just instant message me, you know, instead of sending me email. But, you know, we've been putting your shows on. At first there was, I don't know if you switched your telephone or something's going on, a little bit different, but when we first started doing the shows, we had a little problem with voice. It worked real well on the on-demand, but when we tried live streaming it, there was a lot of static, and the voice sounded wavy, you know, so for the last, like, three or four shows, the voice has been coming across real good, so I've been running live stream, and we've been getting a lot of instant messages in here, you know, saying, you know, how much they're enjoying your show, so I wanted to pass that on to you.
We're good.
Yeah. Did you change your show? Did you change your telephone or something?
No, it's the same cell phone I've had for the last 2 years, so.
Huh. I don't know. Maybe it was here somehow. You know.
Well, actually, one thing that may have changed that would affect it and stuff is our windy season just ended.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe that's
what we have 3 months where it's just almost gale force wind.
Oh, yeah.
And constantly 24 hours a day.
I know. We had that up in the White Mountains, too. You know, those gale force winds. I mean, my God. I mean, it was just miserable. You couldn't step outdoors. And it just never ending.
Well, yeah, you know, it just about put all the dentists out of business. Just when someone wanted to clean their teeth, they'd just go out and grin.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
the sand blowing out there, you'd feel like it was going to scour your teeth. And it's
well, we were
scouring
getting
everything else on you.
We were getting 80 to 100 mile an hour winds. I know that sounds, you know, like I'm exaggerating, but I'm not. They were tipping cars over. You know, trucks over. And, you know, it was just something, you know, that you lived with. And, I mean, it never even got on the news. And then, you know, you'd hear these people saying, oh, well, a hurricane just went through and there's 80 mile an hour winds. You know, it'd be on the news and it's like, that's nothing. We survived those, you know. I don't know. But that was about, about 5-6 years ago up in the White Mountains. One time we had it like that, but boy, I'll tell you, it was miserable. Just miserable. It lasted for a month, 2 months. I think that's when they had those sun flares, you know. Mm-hmm. Something was going on. I don't know what, but I'll tell you what. That's when Brad first went down to Arizona. After that, I don't think he was too pleased with Arizona. It was like, get me back to Wisconsin. You know.
Yeah, we've got these signs out here that kind of amuse us, and it'll say, you know, like, you know, danger, extreme winds, and low visibility may exist, and, you know, dust storms may exist for the next 16 miles, and we're like, yeah, dust storms may exist from here to San Diego, hotshot.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's the desert.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we were up in the White Mountains, though. That wasn't desert.
Yeah, but down here, it's just funny that they have those signs that tell people that to watch out for dust storms for X number of miles, you know, 16 miles, 24 miles, whatever and stuff. And you can have dust storms easily from San Antonio, Texas, to San Diego, California.
Yeah.
Because it's just all desert.
Yeah, yeah.
Take much to figure that out, but I guess they figure they need to tell the tourists or something. I don't know.
Don't want to scare them. Look at Iraq when they had those sandstorms. My gosh, those are something else.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like a wall of sand coming at you.
Yeah. You can get those up in Lubbock, Texas.
Oh, can you?
I mean, yeah, it's just so flat out there when we were growing up and stuff that I was going to a job one time and this big wall of red dust came in, and it was thousands of feet high. You could see it up in the air and stuff. And they're really nasty because when they hit, it's so powerful that you can hardly see anything. It kicks up on your windshields and stuff. And then usually right behind it, it has something else to not improve the situation.
Uh-huh.
Rain. So I was going to work one time, and I wound up having to look out, you lean my head out the window, and I had mud all over the top of my head and on the right side of my head, on my face and stuff, because I was trying to see through the sand when the rain came, and it was raining mud.
Yeah.
It was just great. It's wonderful for your clothes and stuff. But, that happens all over the world. And if you're in a place that's really dry and stuff, you're going to have dust storms.
Yeah.
We have dust devils out here. This, it looks like a small tornado. And you can be going along and there'll be one running down the asphalt on the highway.
Yeah.
And you hit it and instantly your car changes lanes or goes off the shoulder or something.
Yeah. And it says that they hurt like the devil too.
Yeah, they do. It's real fun watching them go through some of the neighborhoods because people's lawn chairs and all sorts of stuff and cushions and things are going up in the air and dropping over a few blocks away and stuff. Just kind of redistributes the wealth, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's all sorts of things out there in nature that get kind of freaky. And in places where it's a whole lot more moist, the hotter it is, then you can actually watch it on things like, you know, a Doppler radar or something, where a tiny little cloud comes along and it hits the edge of an area, you know, that you know, like a town or something, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of hot asphalt and buildings and stuff, and because of all the humidity in the air, then all of a sudden this little bitty cloud blows into this great big raging storm until it gets to the other side, and then it goes back to being a few little clouds again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we do a lot of it to ourselves. And it's one thing that you have things going on with nature, but then we go and build things that are not exactly natural for the earth, and things blow up all around us. And again, we need to be prepared.
Okay, now, speaking about being prepared, you said to do a search, okay, for, you know, like if that happened in Wisconsin, like if there was going to be a comet hit, okay,
yeah.
To do a search and for near, a schedule of comets on near miss trajectories. With the Earth, okay. And so a person could see if they couldn't find something like that, huh?
Yes, but the best thing to do would be to do it with, like I was saying, something like a state university or something of that nature that has either a meteorology, you know, not meteorology, but an astronomy program you know, or has an observatory or some such thing. And the reason for that is the federal government has this policy of not telling people things that will cause a mass panic in a given area. Like, say they know, let's say that they can with their computers, you know, they can figure out, okay, this meteor is coming, and this comet is coming, and it's going to pass by the Earth, and it's either going to miss the Earth, or if it hits the Earth, this is where it's going to hit because of the rotation of the Earth that we know about, and the speed of this meteor, the speed of the Earth, and all this stuff. This is where it's going to hit. So let's say that they know when it's either going to miss the Earth, or it's going to whack Milwaukee.
Yeah.
No.
Well, let's put someplace else besides Milwaukee, because we're real close to Milwaukee.
Right, no, I'm just giving you an example, okay?
Because we're only about half an hour away from there.
Okay, we can...
And not Chicago either, because they're on the other side.
Arkansas.
Okay, yeah, that sounds okay.
Yeah,
sorry,
the national headquarters of the Ku Klux Klan is going to get wiped off the face of the earth. It might not be a bad thing. Anyway, they can say it's going to hit either there or it's going to miss and just go off through space. Well, they're not going to tell people that Harrison, Arkansas is going to get blown off the face of the earth by a meteorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, A, there is always the chance that it's going to miss the earth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to hit some tiny little rock out in space. It's going to change its trajectory. You know, or it's going to hit something that's going to make it hit someplace else on the earth. That can happen too. But they're not going to tell people this and cause this mass panic and cause people to go running all over the place because, number one, they're not really prepared to take care of those people in other places.
Yeah.
And number two, they're really not sure it's actually going
to
happen.
Yeah. What you need to do is watch all the VIPs if you see them moving out of the area. It's like when you watch the animals, you know when there is a natural disaster coming. But if it's going to be like a comet or a nuclear bomb or something like that, watch your VIPs. I don't even think congressmen would actually be told. But watch Bush and Cheney. If all of a sudden those guys start heading south, best thing for you to do is head south too.
Well, I was kind of amused with the email from the guy in the military talking about the meteor going to Wisconsin and all.
Yeah.
Because there are 33 major bases and posts being closed all over the United States right now.
Yeah.
And 115 lesser installations being closed.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people, for instance, are coming here to the New Mexico area and going to Fort Bliss, Texas.
Yeah.
Because the United States military for so long has been geared up towards dealing with the Cold War, and now we're working on dealing with extremism and terrorism, and so the places to be defended are the borders that are a threat.
Uh-huh.
You know, so a lot of these places are being closed and the troops are being moved.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like having restructuring in a corporation. You know, they were making one thing for X amount of time, and now the market's going for that, but a market's developing for something else, and so they retrain people, and they turn some people loose, and they hire some new people, and sometimes they move facilities.
Well, the thing was, the guy never gave his name. He never said who this top brass was that they were talking to. He never mentioned where it was being taken place. Didn't say who they were exactly talking to. You know, it was pretty vague, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
as far as I was,
vague,
you know.
You've also got, you know, the idea that this general is going to be kind of misty-eyed about saying that the place is closing and they're moving. Sure. He's losing his command. Hello.
Yeah.
Doesn't take much to figure that one out. He's going to be downsized.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's probably going to be retired just as soon as the last person's off of that poster base.
Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a comet strike in Wisconsin.
No. Or anywhere else.
Yeah. You know, you know how there's people out there, you know, that they love giving viruses, and there's other ones that loves, you know, sending that spam or turning around and just slamming somebody's email box so they can't get any, you know, email. And then there's other ones that love turning around and putting out a rumor to just to see how far it'll go, you
yeah.
know. And they think nothing of the stress it puts on some people.
Yeah.
Think nothing of the fear. It's just a big joke to them, you know. You know, they're just got that abusive personality, you know, that they just love to cause problems, you know. And so, yeah. And I asked Brad about it. I says, well, what you know, what would you suggest? And he says, Mary, he says, what difference does it make where you go? I don't know. And he says, and you can't just watch one comet, because he says there's so many things flying around up there. He says even if you went to your local, you know, astronomy place, I can't think of what they're called right now, but he says they'd have to know which one to be looking for, you know.
Right.
He says there's a lot of things up there, you know, to be watching. And you know, it's just like, you don't worry about things like that, you know, you just kind of like...
No, you can't. There's nothing you can do about it anyway. I mean, if something hit that was big enough to take out Wisconsin, it would put so much dirt in the air and so much debris and stuff that all the rest of us would either suffocate or freeze before it ever cleared out of the atmosphere.
Well, look at up there. Yeah. You know, where our property is up in Arizona is like right up there, not very far from that meteorite crater. You know what I'm talking about, over by the Petrified Forest.
Yeah.
It's called Meteorite Crater. It's a national monument or national park there, Meteorite Park.
Yeah.
But anyhow, now, I can't remember how many miles wide that is there, you know, where that meteorite hit.
Yeah.
But you can look around that whole area for I don't know how many miles, and you can just see how it just flattened out everything.
Yeah.
I mean, everything around there is flat. And that was just, you know, so, yeah, you're right. If it did that much damage with that hitting there and leaving that size hole, if it hit and knocked out Wisconsin, you can bet that that'd be it, you know. So, but
yeah,
I don't think it's going to happen.
It's one of those things that you can't worry about, because it'll be over for the Earth as a whole. If that happens, we'll have another ice age, and eventually life will come back to this planet again, and things will start up again.
Yeah.
But that would, you know, that's just the way it would be. I mean... there wouldn't be any sun that could get through all of the silt and stuff in the air, the ash and things, and there wouldn't be, therefore everything would freeze.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to grow food or anything. I mean, it's just, it'd be over.
Yeah.
And so you can worry about that sort of thing if you want to.
Yeah.
But it's just a waste of time.
Yeah.
And when it comes to other disasters and stuff that are out there, yeah, sure, you know, prepare for it. Be ready.
Yeah.
It's just good common sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, another thing is how much money do you have on hand?
Yeah.
You know, if something happens that wipes out the economy in your area, like, say, three or four hurricanes back-to-back hitting Florida last year.
Yeah.
You know, they had a 90-day period where they had four hurricanes hit that little piece of land.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't work for those 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, they couldn't work for months after that because stuff is so torn up.
Yeah.
You got to have money available for that to be able to live on.
Yeah.
The government can't always provide it for you. You know, we benefited out here. I mean, I did some stuff with a guy a couple weeks ago, and he was asking, well, you know, why do insurance companies do inspections of property? And I told him, well, you know, it's like this. You've got insurance agents that know how to write a policy, but they don't know a whole lot about construction. So they want someone to go out and verify what the construction of a place is, so that if there's ever a major disaster like what went on in Florida, where there are a lot of houses that even the foundations weren't there anymore, they can look at the agent's file, they can look at the inspection company's file, they write you a check and charge on it. And he said, oh, I know about that. He says, look over at my license tag. And I did. It was from Florida.
Yeah.
And he said, I was in there, said, for 90 days. And said, there was just nothing left. And our insurance company wrote us a check, and we bought this house out here.
Yeah. He didn't want to stay
as far away from water as he could get.
Well, he found it.
Yeah, we have lots of beach, but no ocean here. So.
Yeah. But, yeah. And besides, you know, I'm pretty... If that was true, there'd be a whole lot more out on the net on that, and I couldn't find anything. So I'm almost positive that that was just a rumor. But you know, it was good that it was sent to me, because it was something that we needed to discuss. You know, because I mean, like you said, it could be a train going through, you know, and there's a crash, or you know, for some reason, like the grid, you know, the power grid went down, you know, and you're without you know, without electricity, you know, for X
amount
of time.
Yeah, the grid went down out here.
Truck strike.
3 years ago,
yeah.
And we had 14 states without power.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody ever did figure out what that was caused from, huh?
No, it was it went off, and then all of a sudden, it just kind of came on one day, and nobody ever figured out why. So, you know, who knows? There's always stuff that can happen.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's just, you know, just part of the show, you know.
Yeah.
Taking care of things, you know, to make sure that we're all safe. You know.
Yeah, and let's just hit one other thing right quick on
okay,
this.
Hit it.
When it comes to preparing for disasters and stuff, you make a list of all the things that you would like to have available.
Yeah.
And then you get the most basic stuff first.
Yeah.
You know, food, clothing, medical supplies, shelter, water, you know, all those basic things, you know. And then you can add all this other stuff to it, like if you want to have the major supply of batteries, well, that's great. You need to have something to charge it with. You can go to sportsmansguide.com, you can buy a nice little solar power generator to charge your batteries with.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's really kind of an extraneous thing, you know. It's like it's great to have, but get your basics first. And don't get overwhelmed by the idea of how you're going to prepare for it.
Yeah. Yeah, they got those nice little solar plant panels, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, those portable kinds. You know, and boy, they work good.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, and you know, if you look around, you can find them fairly cheap. You know.
Yeah, that's,
I mean, if you buy them brand new.
Sportsman's Guide, because you can get them for like $24, $25.
Yeah, and they work. I mean, slicker than all get out. You know. So,
yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of. But I think everybody, you know, even if they went to the sporting goods, I mean, there's so many little fun things out there, you know, that, you know, a person can, you know, have, you know, that, I mean, so your life doesn't have to be, you know, you're not going to go back to living like a caveman, you know, I mean, there's a lot of little things out there, and if you had like you found a cave or something like that, and you had it all stocked up, and you had your little solar panels and all that stuff, hey, I'll tell you what, you can do all right. You know, I did. I didn't live in a cave, but I used the solar panels, and I loved them. You know. And but anyhow, anything else we need to be talking about?
Not on this subject at this time that I know of.
Okay, what anything special you wanted to talk about next week?
I'd really like to hear from some people about the things that they would like to know about.
Yeah, okay. It's, we're hitting summer. Everybody's got their mind on being out in that yard, playing around, doing their summer things, you know. But listeners, we'd like to hear from you, you know. And like I said, I'm going to be putting together like these CDs, like almost like in a volume, you know, where you'd be like a little library where you'd be able to buy the whole set, or you can buy them one at a time, you know. But as soon as I get a little chance, I haven't yet, but I keep promising I will, and sooner or later I will. And for those that would like to talk to Sir Clifford, contact him at nasinc.org, or you can contact us here, and then I will send it over to Clifford, and he could answer it for you. And anyhow, we want to thank you for a great show tonight. You know, very important stuff. And for the listeners, remember, Clifford is here every Sunday night from 8 o'clock to 10. And let's see, we've got, and then you can listen to it live streamed, or you can go to BurlingtonNews.net, where Clifford's got his own little spot there called the Cherokee Medicine Way, and you can just go there and click onto it and listen to the show. So, and let's see, there was, let's see, we got, I would go on to another subject, but I don't want to confuse it because of the fact that, you know, otherwise, because like I said, we're doing separate tapes on all these. So I guess maybe we'll just call it an early evening. We got 15 minutes to spare, but I mean, callers, I've been waiting for call-ins, but doesn't look like there's going to be any call-ins tonight. And so if you wanted to just call it an evening, we can just sing.
Well, we can touch on one other thing from a survival standpoint.
Okay.
That would be good.
All right.
And that's things that you can barter with.
Oh, okay.
You know, people are always needing things that they can't normally get that you can just have on hand. Like, it's kind of nice being in Ottawa because anytime someone comes to see me and wants some help with something, or they write and want some help with something, they send me some tobacco.
Uh-huh.
And so I've got just bunches and bunches of packages of tobacco and cigarettes and stuff like that. And that actually makes a pretty good trade item.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, another thing is you can go to an outfit like Cheaper Than Dirt. They have a website also.
Yeah.
And they sell, you know, bulk knives, pocket knives, sheath knives, stuff. You're really cheap. And so you can get you a bunch of knives down here. They're a great trade item in an emergency. Anything like that. If you're kind of on the rich side and you're here in the United States, you know, one of the things that's going to be real popular is hard money.
What money?
And hard money is not dollar bills, okay?
Uh-huh.
Hard money is coins.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you have a situation where the economy seems to be kind of shutting down, coins are going to be a whole lot more valuable, especially if they're gold or silver or something, than, say, a dollar bill or something like that that's not backed up by anything anymore.
Yeah, good luck trying to find a gold coin.
Yeah. Now, you know, when it comes to coins and stuff too, you can go to just about any gun and knife show in the country,
uh-huh.
and you'll find someone selling Eisenhower dollars for $1.50 or $2 a piece.
Oh, okay.
Now, what's the difference between them and a Susan B. Anthony dollar? Well, a Susan B. Anthony dollar is just a little bit larger than the size of a quarter. You know, it's more convenient to carry, but there's really not a whole lot of substance to it.
Uh-huh.
If you want to, you can go to banks around your town and stuff, and you can ask them if they have Eisenhower dollars. They'll be more than happy to trade them to you for your dollar bills, you know, one-on-one, instead of paying the price that you do at a gun show or something.
Mm.
So, you know, if you want to order some for yourself, it takes $10,000 and the Federal Reserve will send you a bag with 10,000 Eisenhower dollars in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, are they pure silver? Or?
No, they're not. They're actually, they're a sandwich coin, just like the other coins nowadays. But they're the size of a silver dollar, and with the copper and stuff that's in them, they're worth a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... that's it. They've got some silver, they got some copper, they've got some nickel and stuff, you know, all mixed in there. It's a sandwich coin. It has layers. And so an Eisenhower dollar is going to be worth $1, $2, $5, whatever, as compared to its buying power right now at a time when there's an emergency, because hard currency will be worth more.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Okay.
And so that's an example.
Well, that's good to know, yeah.
Yeah, you know, anything like this that, you know, if you think about, you know, what are people going to need that they're not going to have enough of? And if you get a few things and somebody else gets a few things and stuff, then basically everyone's going to cover the bases. And you're going to find those people who have something to trade. And you and they are going to get along pretty good. And then other people are going to wind up trading services. That's what I was talking about. You can be prepared, or you're going to be dead, or you're going to be a slave.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be a slave.
No.
You know. I don't think anybody else does either, so.
You know, and even simple things when it comes to weapons like slingshots. You can buy a little wrist rocket for $5-6.
Yeah.
And some extra bands for them and stuff like that. And whether someone uses ball bearings, they use pebbles or whatever and stuff, you know, they got some ammunition, they got something they can defend themselves with, and they've got something they can hunt with.
Yeah.
You know, so simple little things like that are going to make all the difference in the world as to how well you get along.
Well, Brad was in Nam, you know, so.
Yeah.
He kind of knows all the survival tactics there because of that, so. And then, of course, he, you know, he also is up on it. You know, he's got his CPR certification, so.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. Go and see the American Red Cross and learn CPR and first aid and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Very inexpensive to do.
Yeah. Now, what about Reiki healing? People should be up on that, too. Reiki?
Well, if you, yeah, anyone can do Reiki. It's just a matter of having the attunement. And if you go to someone and they're charging you an exorbitant amount of money for attunements and stuff, blow them off and go somewhere else. Personally, from the Cherokee standpoint, if you can't deal with spiritual things, you're wasting your time anyway. So we just do one attunement. We do a Reiki Master attunement on people, and then we train them. You know, so that they can do the spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical stuff all at once instead of just doing the physical for a while and then doing the mental, emotional, and then doing the spiritual.
Yeah.
You know, which is the way it's normally taught in this country. Mikao Yasui, for instance, who started Reiki again in Japan after being basically lost for several hundred years, did one attunement. And so any kind of unity. If you can learn Reiki, that's great. If you can learn polarity therapy, that's great. If you can learn a little bit of the psychic healing, that's great. If you know, if nothing else, well, just to give you an example, my mother's a Christian missionary. And she was telling me about some stuff going on in her church in Jerusalem. And she said, well, you know, we're having this, we have this time for to pray for people for healing after the service for about 5 minutes in the service, and it's really been kind of discouraging because not too many people are getting healed. It's like, well, yeah, the energy's just barely starting to move, Mother. So she said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you schedule a time after the service where people can stay as long as they need to stay. And you have the people come for healing, and you rub your hands together and get them kind of hot and tingly and stuff, and you put your hands on them wherever the Holy Spirit tells you to, and you pray for them until the energy stops flowing. Okay, they tried it. They were there for like 2.5 hours the first day. You know, and they did it until it stopped, and people were healed.
Hold on just a second. Okay, so go on.
Now, if you don't have someone available, like a Reiki master to teach you, or someone who does polarity therapy or something, or even if you do, one thing that I would suggest is you get a book called Pranic, spelled P-R-A-N-I-C, Healing. And the author is Choa Kok Sui, and his name is spelled C-H-O-A, the next word K-O-K, next word S-U-I. And the book is published by Samuel Weiser Incorporated in York Beach, Maine. And, you know, if you need somebody to kind of help you find it in a hurry, the ISBN number is 0-87728 1-800-713-9.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in most cases, if you're looking for it in the catalog, it's going to be listed under alternative healing.
Uh-huh.
But the thing with this book, Pranic Healing, he had three books that were written a while back that dealt with different things, and basically it's all been put together in this one book.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's really a really a handy book. It covers a lot of things like scanning the aura to diagnose disease, and you know, how to clean the aura of diseased bioplasmic matter. Gives you a whole bunch of different treatments to both simple and serious ailments and illnesses. Techniques for self-healing and for distance healing. Has all sorts of full color illustrations of the 11 chakras they use versus the 7 primaries and stuff, and all their color properties and the auras and stuff given off around them. And it's just an excellent, excellent book. So if you want to do energy healing, but you don't have, something like, Reiki or something like that, a Reiki attunement will actually make things, a fair bit stronger. But you can accomplish the same things with something like this that you would with Reiki. You just would have to do it a little bit of a different way and sometimes a little longer.
Well, now how do you get Reiki attunement?
You get that from a Reiki master.
Uh-huh.
And if someone says that they're a Reiki master teacher, then that means that they do attunements. If they're a Reiki master practitioner, they can, but they don't do attunements.
Uh-huh.
Or they haven't yet.
Uh-huh.
They're a Reiki master practitioner until they've given their first attunement, then they're considered a Reiki master teacher.
Okay, so like if I wanted a Reiki master attunement, I just find somebody that's a Reiki master teacher,
right,
here. And then after that, I should be able to do more.
Yes. Now, it is possible to do stuff from a distance, but it's not as good as doing it, actually hands-on with a person.
Uh-huh. Well, I have a Reiki master that comes here and does some work, but I don't know if she's a teacher or not, so I'll have to ask her.
Yeah.
So, her name's Sophia, by the way. A really nice lady. You'd like her.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we now are at the top of the hour, or bottom of the hour. Never could figure out. What is that, bottom of the hour or top of the hour?
I have no idea.
We're at the end of the show, listeners. So, anyhow, again, nazinc.org is where you find Clifford. And you can turn around also, contact us at burlingtonnews.net. Just, you can get contact there and I'll take you right over to the email and ask your questions. Or you can instant message me and I'll pass it on to Clifford. I didn't last week. I apologize for that. I haven't been feeling well this week, though, so I'm going to blame my illness on not staying up on things the way I should have. Yesterday, I even had to cancel. Last night, I had to cancel a tour. Actually, I had to go into the hospital last night. I had the worst migraine headache that I have ever experienced in my life. Actually, I don't even get migraines, but for some reason I got one, and boy, I'll tell you, it just knocked me right out.
Well, if you would like to sometime, we can talk about how to get people over migraines.
Yeah, we're going to have, my husband gets migraines quite a lot,
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about taking...
If you heal people of migraines, and you're also healing them with things like shingles and herpes, because they're all caused by the same thing.
Okay, well, maybe that's what we'll talk about.
Smallpox vaccination.
Maybe that's what our show should be on next week is... problems like such as that, because boy, I'll tell you, I felt what a migraine was last night, and I told Brad, I says, I don't know how you deal with them. He says, usually I just, if I can fall asleep, I'm okay.
Yeah.
But he's actually heading to the point where he passes out. Or mine, I threw up, but that was about it. God, I'll tell you.
Well, it's actually really easy to take care of, so that'd be a good thing to talk about.
Yeah, but we're not going to tell you listeners how to take care of it until next week's show. Okay.
Absolutely.
You take care, and I love you, and I'm sending you plenty of love vibrations down your way. Okay.
Well, thank you.
And listeners, we thank you so much for tuning in tonight. And some of you are just going to have to get over your fears and call in. I know what's going on there. You're just afraid to be on. You're afraid. That happens a lot with my groups, too, Clifford.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, they'll say, oh, well, we want to do this, we want to do that. And I says, good. And I says, we'll go into the group, our Yahoo chat, and I says, and we'll put it right on the show. And guess what?
Yeah.
I got all those members, and they won't do it. They're all afraid. They don't like having their voices on the phone, you know. So, and, you know, it's difficult for some people, you know. So, anyhow, listeners, you're just going to have to get over it, you know, because we're just going to keep right at you until you get over that fear and you start participating. Well, but you're doing a good job, because I know you're all out there listening, and I know that you're all out there taking notes. So I send my love to you guys, and I am proud of you guys for tuning in as much as you do. So we both thank you for that. And anyhow, good night, Clifford, and you have a great week.
You too.
And be happy.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.